How's it going? And welcome to episode 227 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. I am Adam Howe, joined as always by Kevin Hastings. Back to our roots, Kevin. We are live on a Saturday night with almost all the games at least started. I think there's two more games yet to start this evening, maybe just one. But it's cool to have, like, there's definitely two or three pieces of news that we wouldn't have gotten to if we were recording this on a Thursday or Friday night, as we have been. So nice to be with you with as much detailed information as we possibly fit down everybody's throat. How you doing?
Doing great, Adam. Thank you so much. Yeah, it's been kind of hectic leading to this. First postponed until this morning, and then I postponed until this evening. And yeah, so we have some more news and frantically trying to absorb it all. Yeah, but only 6 weeks of the season to go. It's crazy.
Yeah, you want as much information as you can possibly absorb when you only have this much time to go.
Right.
You start looking at it and you're like, obviously you're at a point. Most of us are at a point who are in multiple leagues that you start thinking about, all right, where can I make the most difference? And of course, you're always going to, you know, pay attention to as many of the leagues as you possibly can. But you start getting realistic about which ones are going to be the most successful, and you start the perspective of your entire season goes into looking through the lens of just those leagues, and you start to realize, oh wow, okay, yeah, I've only got 5 weeks left, I only have 6 weeks left, what do I need to be doing, and what kind of drastic measures do I have to make in this league that are different than this other league? How are you feeling overall with most of your finishes?
I have some opportunities in a couple of leagues, and exactly what you were just talking about this morning. You know, when I'm looking at the categories, I'm trying to be realistic, right? If I'm double digits behind in home runs from gaining more than a point or two, right, we still got to watch who's behind us in categories. That's very important. We talk about that every year around this time when we start really concentrating on categories. But at the same time, realistic, I'm not making up a lot of home runs in 6 weeks. It's possible to get a few, but if you're only looking to gain a point and you have 9 or 10 home runs to make up to get that one point, I'd be looking at another category, right? So that's where I'm at. Trying to be realistic where my opportunities to move up, and also where's the opportunities that I need to protect against moving down.
Yeah, and we're still at a point where there's, like you said, 6 weeks left. If you drop the wrong guy, somebody in your league can pick them up and benefit from them. So we talk about, like, if you're so far ahead in saves or even stolen bases. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago with stolen bases. Like, you can consider dropping your rabbits and not going with three closers, going with just two closers. But if you drop the wrong guy, like, just know somebody's going to pick them up and they're going to have enough time to benefit from that as well. So maybe if you can afford to bench them instead of dropping them outright, depending on where you sit in the standings and where your next closest competitor does too, maybe those are the decisions you have to consider as well.
Yeah, I think, and the rabbits, more than anything else, they come into play with that dropping them too early, right? Because they can get a lot. Sure, somebody can go out and hit 4 or 5 home runs in a week. Is somebody that's going to go out and hit 4 or 5 home runs this week available on the waiver wire? Highly unlikely. Are we going to be on the guy that does it? Even higher unlikely. Somebody will get lucky if it happens and have them in their lineup on their roster, and that's wonderful. Stolen bases, much more realistic for something like that to happen. So if you're the one, if you're dropping that guy and making it available to people, they can make a big jump. That's a great point.
Well, one of the guys that we're going to lead off with the news section here that could possibly hit 4 or 5 home runs that is probably available in your leagues is Robert Seymour. Robert Seymour makes his debut for the Tampa Bay Rays. Sorry, his Major League Baseball debut. He, leading up to his debut, he did lead or tied the lead in all the minors, all the levels of the minors, with 30 home runs on the season so far. He did finish 2024 with 28 homers through 455 at bats across two different levels, Double A and Triple A. So this is somebody who has plenty of power in his bat. The question is, Kevin, with Tampa, and this is the next couple of news items are going to be debuts, right? Because we talked about this. We're at a point, we're getting closer and closer to that magic number where we're going to start seeing, you know, decently named prospects come up and retain their rookie eligibility for 2026, even if they play all the way through. Now, I am not suggesting Robert Seymour is rookie, you know, he's going to win Rookie of the Year next year for the Rays, but it is still possible, because the question is, how much playing time is he going to get at the major league level? Will he not get the 140 at-bats that are necessary to lose that playing time eligibility for Rookie of the Year? What's your overall thoughts on Robert Seymour in Tampa?
Yeah, I think it's just, especially with an organization like Tampa, I think it's in their minds to leave all options open. But I think we're at that point, and they have figured it out. And yeah, with even just a day off every couple of weeks, he'd stay under that threshold. They waited until the date where he wouldn't have enough days. So I think that's the key. I think, you know, 5.5 back of the wild card and multiple teams bunched up in front of him. Just the first two games that he's on the roster, just sliding Yandy Diaz to DH so he can start at first base both games. I'm pretty confident Tampa's looking to play him most days the rest of the way. And then in that case, he's definitely somebody. There's not much power out there this yeah. late in the season with all the IL. Right? Anybody that's got 30 home run capability, we're definitely interested in right now.
Yeah, batting, of course, against two righties his first two games in the seventh spot in the lineup for Tampa Bay. You know, it's very easy just to give him that, even the strong side of the platoon, to keep those at-bats at bay and just to keep him under that threshold. What is the day? How many days do they have to be on the roster before they lose eligibility? Because I know, of course, there's at-bats threshold, there's the innings pitch threshold, but then there's days on active roster as well. And my mind is blanked right now what that number be. But if you don't know off the top of your head either, I'll look it up as we're talking about our next thing, because there's somebody else that came up that could also be eligible for the American League Rookie of the Year. And that is Dylan Beavers, at least after what we've seen him do in the minors in AAA this year. This is a tale as old as time, though, right? With the Baltimore, with the Norfolk Tides just cranking out positive batters in the Baltimore system. And then they finally make their way up to Baltimore. Dylan Beavers did indeed join the Orioles on Saturday in the lineup. But Dylan Carlson is still there. We still got a handful of other mouths to feed in the outfield for Baltimore. And again, this is another tale as old as time, at least recent time, that we've seen in Baltimore. How are you expecting the Orioles to use Beavers the rest of the way?
I would like to say we're going to see what he can do as well. But as you brought up, with Baltimore, with recent history of what we've seen them do with all these young players, you know, we have, it appears to me Dylan Beavers is going to be competing with Jeremiah Jackson for at-bats, and he's only been up for a couple of weeks playing the same position. So that is going to be the issue. Definitely monitor it and see Sunday's lineup as well. We only have one game to go off of here, and I am afraid that Beavers is not going to get the playing time that we would like to see. But if he does, he's definitely on our radar. This time of year, it's hard to wait and see. It really is. Sure. Because somebody probably will have at least a dollar or two bid on him. You know, this is a guy that was going to be over 2020. He's already at 18 home runs and over 20 stolen bases. He's going to be, while hitting over 300, he's getting picked up this weekend. Now, it probably won't be that expensive because of that playing time concern. So if you want to gamble that you think he will get the playing time, then you go an extra dollar or two because he won't be available next week. Unfortunately, we're not going to know about the playing time until next week, I don't think. So this is if you could use, and who couldn't right now, use a 2020 bat. yeah, I probably go a couple dollars here, knowing that if I'm out of money, it could very well be a waste of that $2. He may not get the playing time that we're able to put him in our lineups. I know that was a long ramble for saying I don't know, basically. But I think that's it, so much to look at with these guys coming up this time of year.
Yeah. I mean, he's competing with the likes of Daniel Johnson, who they just claimed from the Giants and then called up just earlier in the week, or actually just late last week. Jeremiah Jackson, as you mentioned before, Dylan Carlson seems to be on a little bit of a fire beneath him right now, where he wants to continue to have a job himself. Tyler O'Neill can't stay healthy. Keston Kjerstad has been struggling mightily and was just on the 7-day concussion IL as well, or at least the IL in the minors as well. So there might not be as much competition as in the past, at least in the outfield. That we've seen for like Keston Kjerstad, the perfect example in Baltimore. I see a little bit more of a road to playing time for Beavers, at least at this juncture. Now, all of a sudden, Tyler O'Neill finds his way to a healthy, you know, final 5 weeks of the season. You know, there's a whole nother story to be written here. But I actually like the way I would be bidding on him, but I would also be hoping that enough of my league mates are seeing, you know, are thinking about that narrative that we tend to think about with Baltimore, and not trust the fact that Beavers is going to get the playing time that he would need to be, you know, useful.
I loved what you were saying, Adam, and then I just noticed one more thing.
Oh no.
They get Colton Cowser back tomorrow.
Oh,
Sunday. Cowser's returning on Sunday. So throwing some water on everything you said that loving. I was like, oh yeah, maybe I'm going $3 or $4 on Beavers here, but and hoping to land him. But yeah, Cowser's coming back as well.
Yeah. Oh geez. It rhymes with a player we're going to be talking about a little bit later. So I think I just kind of glazed that fact over. So I'm glad you saw that and noticed that. One more debut happening on Saturday, just in time for bid considerations this weekend, was Nolan McLean, starting pitcher for the New York Mets, got to call up over the likes of Sprout and others in consideration, did just fine for himself in his debut. Five and a third innings, did have four walks, but did strike out eight and only allowed two hits, and got all the pitching ninja gifts that you could possibly handle with that curveball. And so Nolan McLean, as far as the Mets rotation situation goes, is this a one and done? Do you expect him to get another start, especially after the performance he put on? He got the win as well in his debut. So that's always nice to get that man, that baseball, to put it in his study. What's your overall thoughts on McLean as it stands for the remainder of the 2025 season?
Well, as it stands right now, Roster Resource has him going again next week, and that start would be at Atlanta, who has been struggling. So I'd be in on that. So yeah, that's with Manea already. We know he's been back for a few starts. So I think this probably is something that we see him out there at least another week. And yeah, definitely interested. We don't have a lot of pitching available right now, especially starters either. So anybody that has a performance like McLean just had, we're going to be interested in at least taking a look at who their next matchup is.
Yeah, I mean, he looks, if he can, I mean, he was striking everybody and their cousin out in the minors as well. So the strikeout rate, if nothing else, as long as the Mets continue to allow him to go five, and this isn't just a, hey, we just need you to eat three or four innings type of situation, at the very least, strikeouts are something that I would expect out of McLean moving forward as well. All right. That was a couple of nice debuts, but now we have a long string of unfortunate injuries to talk about, and I'm going to have to collect myself and catch my breath on this one. So before we do that, I'm going to take a quick break. All right. Now we're clear. Our heads are clear, Kevin. We've got quite a few of big name injuries. Of course, I'm going to start off with the least of the big names here first in Minnesota. Minnesota places Alan Rodon on the IL with a thumb sprain. But the positive news here is that they get to recall James Outman, who they had traded from the Los Angeles Dodgers in the Brock Stewart trade. Brock Stewart, just as a reminder, is on the IL themselves as well. Did get some injections, and that apparently was a positive thing. Not that you are expecting anything out of Brock Stewart in your fantasy leagues, but can James Outman take advantage of this situation in Minnesota and become that much more relevant as a lot of us thought he would be in, you know, as a Dodger to start the season?
I wish I could say yes, Adam. I in fact, he was the first player I looked at this week when I started doing my fab prep for the weekend. I thought, oh yeah, James Outman, this is going to be great. James Outman has one hit since the middle of May. Now, yeah, he's been down quite a bit, but there's probably 20 some plate appearances in there. He just isn't hitting. And there was a little bit, you know, we think of power with James Outman. We've seen that from him in the past. We've seen it at the major league level even. But it just isn't translating to the major leagues. Yeah, we know he's going to strike out 30% of the time, but we expect home runs to come with it. We have not seen that this season. We have at the minor league level, he's got over 20 home runs, but he's just not making contact at all. A 103 batting average on the season, that's actually higher than I thought it would be by just glancing at his game logs. So as much as I love James Outman, as much as I know this is a small sample, 44 plate appearances at the major league level this season, and we just haven't seen him put it together for a long stretch at the major league level since a couple of years ago for the Dodgers. We got pretty excited there for a while, and it just hasn't come together. Like I said, I thought James Outman was going to be my top target of the week, and I don't think I'm even including him in my waterfalls. Unfortunately, he's just not making contact.
Yeah, it's too bad. I mean, if this is simply a one-to-one swap out with Rodon, Rodon wasn't exactly playing every day since getting traded over from Toronto either. He missed more than a handful of games, though he was, you know, at least to start, leading off a few of those games as well. Outman starting in the nine spot on Saturday playing left field. So that's nice that they call him up and they give him the start right away. But, you know, we'll have to see how much playing time is actually there for him to figure it out and show, you know, to get out of that slump that you mentioned since the middle of May. All right. Another we talk about the Dodgers. We might as well go right into this one. Max Muncy of the Dodgers finds his way back to the IL, getting placed there with a grade one oblique strain. The Dodgers recalled Buddy Kennedy in the corresponding move. A whole lot of other moving parts, I feel like, in the Dodgers infield because of this. But overall, what your overall observations and expectations out of said infield, Kevin?
Well, we both have this in the outline for later. Clear down in the opportunity section. I think it's pretty clear who the winner here is. And on top of the notes you have for Miguel Rojas, which is everything I was looking at and thought, all right, yep, this looks great. And then on top of it, they get a 4-game series at Colorado to begin the week. We're not expecting Max Muncy or Tommy Edman back anytime soon. So this is a great week, in my opinion, for Miguel Rojas, which you/PLBot agrees with.
Yeah, well, I was again, this is the luxury of recording on a Saturday, right? I get the luxury of slimming through PL Bot's projections for the week as they come out on Saturday mornings for the following week. And yeah, I mean, I was looking through the power options that were out on there, and Miguel Rojas was the first name that popped up that had actual eligibility. I'm like, what are we talking about? And I had totally forgotten about Max Muncy being out. I'm like, oh, that makes all the sense in the world. And of course, like you said, with Tommy Edman being out and Hyung-Sun Kim also being on the IL and not coming back, at least not this week, or not expected to be, Alex Freeland slots over to third base to take over for Muncy, and obviously leaving a hole. Freeland had been playing both third base and second base, mostly second base most recently. And so for him to open that spot up, Miguel Rojas is the obvious answer here. So we just made that portion of the podcast that much shorter by talking about this. So maybe we'll have somebody else to talk about by the time we get down there.
Yeah, then you throw a 7-game week with 4 of those 7 games being at Coors on top of all that. And that makes Miguel Rojas very enticing. And 2% rostered in 15-team leagues, 0% in 12s. He's going to be a very popular ad this weekend.
Yeah, still having that triple eligibility to go along with it in the NFBC, second base, shortstop, third base. So you've got your middle, you've got your corner, obviously your UT spot that can fill in as well. So nice. He'll be a popular ad across the board since he's so readily available and has such a good opportunity ahead of himself. Now, the one we alluded to a little bit earlier that rhymes with Colton Cowser, kind of, is Kyle Stowers. It doesn't really rhyme now that I say it out loud, but it's fine. It's got the same vowel sound. He hits the IL for Miami with the grade 1 strain of his own. We were looking at this before. I'm like, all right, I see the note that he had a grade 1 strain, but that's all it says. It's grade 1 strain of what? And then we look a little bit further. I'm like, oh, his left side. Okay, so it really is just a strain. You might as well have just said it's like a hockey injury. It's like a strain of body. So his left side is all strained out, and he is on the IL. Kyle Stowers, that is. Impact of his absence first and foremost, how have you seen anything else as far as how long you expect him to be out for? And are we considering dropping Stowers? We're at that point in the season, right? If you have a strong enough injury, we're going to get to another guy later on who does have said injury that I expect to see a lot of drops on this weekend. But does Stowers fit that mold?
Unfortunately, this got to that point really quickly. A few hours ago, the update was he was withheld from the game as a precaution. 5 hours later, not only is he going on the IL, but it's several weeks is what we're being told. We only have barely several weeks left in the season. So unfortunately, barring another very quick change in news over the next 24 hours, he probably is a drop. And it's very unfortunate. Probably the breakout of the year for fantasy baseball.
That's the phrase, right? Several weeks. If you see several weeks, you'll be like, all right, I've got itchy trigger fingers. This guy's not on my team that much longer. Overall, his
absence. So I guess we'll see. You know, we've already seen them. You know, with some guys in the outfield that we have been adding recently, right? Miami's lineup's been playing pretty well, and a lot of the players have been rostered, and we've been getting value from them. Heriberto Hernandez has been added already in places. So I think it's probably Derek Hill here. Dane Meyers already getting starts versus lefties, probably picks up a few versus righties. So Dane Meyers and Derek Hill both getting a bump in playing time. But other than that, the Miami lineup had become fairly stable in recent weeks.
And not that anybody needs any more excitement over him, but Jacob Marcy, who you mentioned a couple weeks ago, he slots right into Kyle Stowers' old spot in the two hole, where even though he'd been doing all of damage in the six, seven, eight spots for most of the time, you put him in the two spot, and he can, if he continues to do what he's been doing, oh man, everybody who got on that train early is going to be that much happier. All right, let's see some more injury news. Unfortunately, I'll start. This one's got a good and a bad news. Of course, we got a little worried that John Duran, after being hit in the ankle with the comebacker, got some x-rays. X-rays came back negative, and he has said he is feeling great at 100% going into Saturday's game. He was actually listed as available on the lineup card. So that was good news for Philadelphia. The bad news in Philadelphia is that Zach Wheeler has hit the IL with a blood clot in his shoulder, and no timetable on how the severity or when that might be something that clears itself up. In my daily leagues, I saw Matt Strom being picked up right away. Kurgan was being picked up right away. And then, of course, Duran coming back, at least verbally. I haven't seen if he actually made it into the game today or not. But I'm not too worried about their bullpen anymore. But Zach Wheeler leaving an opening in the Philadelphia rotation, how worried are you about Wheeler? And then what kind of replacement are you expecting in their rotation?
I'm really worried. Obviously, I'm not dropping Zach Wheeler until I get some more information, but blood clot and throwing shoulder doesn't sound good to me. So I am very worried. As someone who rosters Zach Wheeler in a couple of leagues and planning for not having him the rest of the season, I'm hopeful that I'll get him back in a couple of weeks, but I'm going to plan on him. I'm going to plan on dropping him next week as of right now. And as far as Philadelphia's rotation goes, they're somewhat fortunate. They're planning to get Aaron Nola back anyway this week, so I think that kind of takes care of itself there, but not in quality of performance. Aaron Nola hasn't been what we've seen him be in the past for a while, and the when we've seen him on the mound recently, it hasn't been good. But he's going to be the guy that takes Wheeler's spot in this rotation.
The question really that I think everybody should be worried about or wondering is, does this do once again stop Zach Wheeler from getting a Cy Young? Like being out the final 5 or 6 weeks of the season, it's going to hurt tremendously.
Absolutely. And that's hopefully we're lucky, and this is something, as you, the phrase you use, clears itself up. Because I think that that's what we need to happen for this to be a short term thing. Because him getting back on the mound, even if it's just a couple of starts at the end of the year, would help that case. Absolutely.
Yeah, so if you had any money on the NL Cy Young Award, any of the platforms you use still have a decent line on anybody but Wheeler, go ahead and hit that up. We don't usually talk about bets here, but I mean that's a pretty obvious one. So the other one that I expect to be the big drop, this is the one I expect to be the big drop over the weekend, and please correct me if you think I'm way off base here, but Josh Hader, he hits the IL for the Houston Astros with a shoulder strain of his own, and it's already been reported that he will not be throwing at least for the next 3 weeks. And that's just not throwing. That's, you know, reevaluation coming after the not throwing part to figure out what he'll have to do to come back. Do you, especially even as good as Josh Hader is and has been and continues to be, even if he comes back with 2 weeks left in the season, is he worth stashing on your bench for what he could possibly bring back to the table, even if he comes back at 80%, 90%?
There would be a scenario where I could hold him, but it's it's pretty specific, right? You have to have good health, the rest of your team. You would be stashing. You could use that spot for a stash regardless. Yeah, in most instances, no. But the there is that opportunity there, right? We talked about it last week. It sure seemed like there was a lot of potential saves available. And at this point, if you're saying you could possibly get 4 or 5 out of Josh Hader the last couple of weeks of the season, I think there is some appeal to that. It's really hard to keep that spot available with there's only 6 weeks left. 4 of them, he's not going to be in your lineup. It's very, very difficult. There is a scenario where I could see myself trying, but in most, no.
And the obvious pickup here, obviously in Houston, Brian Abreu should ultimately be, you know, one of the top closers.
Finally, for those of us that have been had him in our lineup for ratios all season long, now we're getting a little more out of him, right?
Still only 33% rostered in the main event, so he will be another very
highly sought
after free agent in just about all of your leagues, or at least 2/3 of them. All right, it was the biggest names. Oh, and I'm going to put Chase Burns in the big name list at this point, especially after what he has done to start his MLB career. But he does hit the IL as well, and Cincinnati loses him with another grade one injury, this time a right flexor strain. On a somewhat positive note, they also announced that Wade Miley was starting a rehab assignment, so they'll get Wade Miley back in the next, you know, couple starts, depending on how long that takes to bring him back. But in the immediate future, what are you expecting to see out of the hole that Chase Burns leaves in the Cincinnati rotation?
Yeah, this is fun because last week, Cincinnati was the first team out of the NL wildcard, but they were 4 games back. This week, they are still the first team out, but they have gained quite a bit of ground. By the time we're done recording, they could be 1 game out of the wild card, potentially. And fortunately for them, it could have been much better. It could have been much better, but fortunately, they did just get Hunter Green back. So, and he looked great on Wednesday. So that's where we're at. Yes, they would love to have Hunter Green and Chase Burns down the stretch for this postseason run and maybe even into the postseason. But they got Hunter Green back, so we know who's taking his spot.
There you go. Yeah, and Hunter Green looked more than excellent amazing on his way back in. So, all right. For those watching at home, you got to see me all you got to do is tap the wrong cord and all of a sudden all my cameras go out, my mics go back. And luckily I got it back. Just you got a weird angle where you can look up my nostrils for the time being. So you can deal with that as you're watching the few of you that are watching on YouTube as we're doing this live.
We move on here, Adam, I love Uncle Ted's comment in the chat. I would love it if Nick Pivetta is who sneaks in and wins the NL Cy Young with everything that's going on at this point in the season. For as many times over the years as we thought Nick Pivetta was going to be what we're finally seeing, I would love to see that.
That would be that'd be great to see. And especially after seeing, you know, Pivetta being the fantasy darling that he was when he first came up, but he has not, as Nick Pollock always points out every time he talks about him, he has not in his eight or nine years seasons that he's been in Major League Baseball has not finished a season with less than a 4 ERA. And now he's doing what he's doing this season. It's kind of mind boggling. So it's going to be pretty special. So that road has been paved for Pivetta to sneak in there, along with, you know, Paul Skeens and everybody, and, you know, a handful of others that might find their way in there. This one, a little bit on the smaller side, more of a Seattle Mariners note in general. A couple of moves that they made this week. they bring back Luke Raley while optioning Miles Mastrobuoni. And then on the pitching side, they do lose Logan Evans to the IL with a right shoulder inflammation. They recall Taylor Saucedo to take his place on the roster. Let's start with Luke Raley being in Seattle. I know you're a fan and you have talked about him in the past, but does he kind of fit into what Seattle's been kind of bit on a tear, right? Since the trade deadline and even right before that as well. But obviously the likes of, you know, Josh Naylor and Eugenio Suarez gave a new kind of breath of life to this lineup. Can Luke really continue the magic and or take advantage of it?
Not this week.
Nope.
5 out of 6 lefties this week, unfortunately. We only saw Luke Raley versus righties before they made the additions they made at the trade deadline. We're definitely not seeing him versus lefties now, and they faced 5 of them this week. So definitely not a Luke Raley week. In fact, it's a week if you need the spot, you drop him and you pick him up again next week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there you go. I mean, see, these are other kind of things you got to think about when making these decisions. Like, oh, man, I need to pick up X, Y, and Z, but I got no one to drop. Yes, you do. You have Luke Raley, and he's got nothing going on. Yep. And then Logan Evans had been kind of filling in the rotation for Seattle here and there, mostly out of necessity and because Seattle didn't really do anything on the pitching front at the deadline. They only brought in extra bats, really. So is his absence going to open it up for anything else to happen in that Seattle rotation?
For now, it's the return of Bryce Miller. For now, I want to say, I don't know if we've seen it all year until the last week or so. The starting 5 for Seattle, it all healthy. Now, a couple of them aren't performing as we would have hoped, Bryce Miller being one of them. And the most recent one back. So I guess there is a possibility that he's not healthy or just isn't ready to go. And so maybe there would be a move. But I think for now, it appears we're finally going to see the starting 5 rotation that we were expecting out of Seattle all year.
Nice. Okay. Well, something to say about consistency and living up to expectations. So something that Toronto kind of been a nice little surprise in general across in just the baseball sphere, maybe not as a Red Sox fan in the AL East, but in generally speaking, they're going to get some bodies. One of them they're going to get back. The other one they're going to get a debut. One of them they already got back. George Springer, he did come back, was in the lineup today. Actually got plunked by Rowdy Tellez as well. So that was a fun little moment if you watch the replay of that happen. Getting plunked with like a 64-mile-per-hour curveball or fastball to the hip. He just stood there. Springer did. It's just pretty fun. It's like, what are you gonna do? It's like getting hit in slow pitch softball where you just catch the ball. That's what Springer could have done with that pitch. He could have just like dropped the bat, put his hand down, caught it, and then thrown it back to him. That's just the way it kind of looked. But Springer is back in Toronto. And then Shane Bieber finished up his last rehab. His rehab was extended after being traded from Cleveland by the Toronto Blue Jays, but now it seems to be over. He is expected to make his team debut for the Blue Jays sometime next week. Let's start with, you know, Springer coming back into the Toronto lineup. What kind of movement are you expecting to see with his presence back for Toronto?
Yeah, it looks like a 1-for-1, at least roster-wise, with Loperfido being sent down back to AAA. He was playing nearly every day when healthy. Looks like George Springer, I think he'll be the designated hitter for a little while here, ease him back in. They'd been spreading that around, right? Vlad will DH once in a while. Bo Bichette had a DH appearance recently. So I think they can afford to let Springer have that spot and ease him back in. Nathan Lukes is going to play versus righties. We're going to see Dalton Varsho in center. And then a combination of Davis Schneider and Miles Straw, just like we have been seeing recently, that we typically see both of those guys get in there versus lefties, and they are both on Saturday. So, you know, there may be a little more movement here and there, but I think for the most part, we're going to see Springer taking over that DH spot.
It makes a whole lot of sense, especially with Springer's own injury history. He was DHing pretty much every day leading up to the injury as well, filling in a little bit in the corner outfield spots when necessary, but not too surprised to see him at the DH spot leading off, though, which is, you know, nice. He threw him right back in to the mix in that respect. And then Shane Bieber making his debut for Toronto should make him available next week in most fab circles where you can't have availability until you make your debut, assuming he was not drafted. I mean, this is Shane Bieber, somebody who very well might have been drafted in a league or two that you might have been in the NFBC and then dropped, obviously, when you realize, oh, that's right, he's not coming back for a very long time. But most likely available next week. It's a weird situation where Shane Bieber, he's looked pretty good in his rehab stints from what I've seen overall. We'll have only 5 weeks to go when we bid on him next week. What are your overall expectations about saving up money for Shane Bieber to be added to your rosters?
It's something that if I'm close to a big bunch, right, in wins and or strikeouts, and we feel like Bieber is going to have the innings in him when he returns and not have a lot of building up left. And it seems like with his rehab starts that this could be the case. He could be ready to go. So I think in leagues where you do have a little extra money, I'm taking that into consideration. If there's a big bunch in wins, because we could get, you know, six starts out of Shane Bieber. That doesn't sound like a lot. It's a fifth of a season, right? Sure. We could get, and we know that they can be high quality innings. So yeah, absolutely. It's something, even though he's not available to us until next week, I'm probably taking that whether or not he is available in the leagues where I need someone like him into consideration on how much I'm spending this weekend. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. 25% rostered across the main event.
I was just gonna bring that up.
So he has definitely been picked up, dropped, held. I'm very surprised if he was held by most of those teams the entire season, but Uncle Ted mentioning he just picked him up in one of his leagues as well. So he very well, you could be bidding on him this week instead. Instead of waiting until next week.
Always check.
And that'll wrap it up for any news and notes. And as I double check to make sure nothing else has come across the wire, nope, I am not seeing anything. Kevin, we're going to get into our recommendations. But of course, we went through a whole lot of news and notes so far for fab related things. But I'm sure there's other things that we definitely missed and I definitely intentionally left off. You should be still listening to the First Pitch podcast with Jake Crumpler and the week. And Trevor Huth on the weekends. They break down all the news, highlights, and observations from every day's worth of games, as well as looking ahead to each slate to keep you up to date to everything you need to know to win your fantasy league. And Nick Pollock is back from his trip to Austria with the Plus Pitch podcast every weekday on his live stream every single morning. And of course, you can find that on the Plus Pitch podcast wherever you're listening to your podcast as well for every starting pitcher performance from the day prior. With that being said, let's take another quick break. All right, we are back. Thank you all for listening, watching on this Saturday evening. We don't get to do this very often with our schedules, but I'm happy to kind of get back to it, especially with all the news that came across our desk this Saturday with the call-ups and the IL stints and things of that nature. So glad that we were able to hit on those things. But now let's get into our recommendations here, Kevin. We still need some power, speed, opportunity. You know, we need our wins. We need our ratios. We need all these things. And let's go through category by category as we tend to do, starting with power, home runs, RBIs. Who do you have out there that can, and as I mentioned earlier, it is Saturday, so I will have some recommendations from PL Bot as well. But Kevin, who do you have your eye on, regardless of what PL Bot has to say?
Yep. I did mention that I wanted James Outman to be a recommendation this week, sure. And I ended up that I probably won't be interested in some deep leagues. He may be the best option out there. So he is worth mentioning, James Outman, for sure. We talked about Ryan Mountcastle last week, and we brought up the fact that he hadn't been hitting with much power this season, but there wasn't much of a sample to look at, and he was coming back, and the rehab looked good. And sure enough, he hit two home runs this week. He is 100% rostered in 15-team main events, but available in almost half of 12 teamers. So still interested in Ryan Mountcastle for my 12s. And then Ramon Urias, we know I've liked him in the past, and the trade to Houston, I was intrigued, and for he might have been okay for some daily leagues, wasn't getting the set playing time. He's started four consecutive games. He's on a bit of a hot streak, and it appears until we see Jordan Alvarez that Ramon Urias is going to be the everyday second baseman right now. Jose Altuve DHing every day. Mm-hmm. Yes, when we see Alvarez, hopefully when we see Alvarez, hopefully it's when, not if, at this point. Man. Been thinking that for months, though. But right. He is swinging a bat, taking live batting practice. At the length of what he's missed so far, I'm not worried that we're going to see Jordan Alvarez thrown in the lineup randomly all of a sudden one day this week and surprise us. So I'd be confident in sending Ramon Urias out there in my lineups. And he also qualifies at third base as well, so middle corner. And I just think that short porch out there, the Crawford boxes in Houston, with his regular playing time, and he's been making contact and solid contact, we're going to see a couple balls go out of the ballpark there in Houston for Ramon Urias before too long.
Yeah, that's a good call out there. Especially with that new opportunity he has with his new team as well. And anytime you can bring up Ramon Urias as an option, you're going to find a way to do it, though, Kevin. Name that didn't really pop up from PL Bob, but name I think we mentioned a couple weeks ago, and I'm going to throw out there again now as he's getting a lot that much closer, is Pavin Smith coming back to Arizona. Like I said, he's on rehab right now. He is playing first base on his rehab as well. So that's nice that, you know, not expecting him just to be the DH. And Torey Lavulis did say that him and Locklear would be playing, both of them would be playing available when they were both available upon Smith's return. So I do expect to see some swapping between first base and DH between the two of them. And a shout out to Jeff Zimmerman's Mining the News for that added insight. I think a lot of us maybe think of Mining the News a lot more in the preseason and during spring training. But Jeff is grinding that throughout the rest of throughout the season as well. So if you're not following that all season long, you're doing it wrong, or at least you're missing out on information. Pavin Smith, 53% rostered in the main event, so readily available in your 15s. And if he's going to play as often as most of us expected or hoped he would once Josh Naylor was traded, like a lot of us were just assuming it was inevitable, and then Pavin Smith had to go and get hurt, and you're like, oh man, how long am I gonna have to wait? Naylor gets traded, and then like, all right, there's a, you know, English was in there for a week as a stopgap. Now Locklear's in there. Lavoie saying Locklear's going to play. This is all going. And then when I saw the note about that, Lavoie said that they're both going to end up playing, and you were kind of right back to where we started. So Pavin Smith, a lot of opportunity there. Threw him in the power category as well. Shout out to JJ Bleda as an option that PL Bot is expecting to have a decent week, even with with the Athletics being away from West Sacramento for the week. But PLBot has him projected with 23 to 24 plate appearances. And I love this 2.4 RBI. I look at that as like a 240% chance of getting an RBI on the week. So, you should have two to three RBI on the week, and then a 0.9 home run. Again, a 90% chance of hitting a home run on the week. So power, not like you said, the guy who's going to hit three or four or five home runs on the week probably isn't available on your wire. And so finding power, at least projectable power, not the easiest task. Even for PLBot, but JJ Bleday toward the top of that list in that regard as well. On to speed, Kevin. We're looking for stolen bases. We're looking for runs. I will lead it off here with PLBot's selection, and I thought this was a really interesting one, because one thing that I always find interesting about all projection systems is how they project playing time. And then you're taking what they're projected to do on an average basis and then equating their playing time to, extrapolate what they're can possibly do. So at the very top of PLBot's rankings or projections for stolen bases comes Brandon Lockridge of Milwaukee, who's been filling in pretty much all weekend, or will continue to fill in all weekend, for the two missing pieces of Isaac Collins and Blake Perkins. They're both on respective leaves. I don't expect them to be out that long. I mean, on bereavement leave and paternity leave, I believe you only get like 3 or 4 days at most. So I do expect them both to be back unless there's extenuating circumstances early on next week. With that being said, this is a 80 grade speed that Lockridge brings to the table. Brandon Lockridge comes over from San Diego at the trade deadline as part of the Nestor Cortez trade. And he's been up for a hot minute for the last couple of weeks, and he's been playing sparingly. Nice to get him an opportunity over the weekend to see what he can do. But if he can force the Brewers to take a longer look at him, even with Isaac Collins and Blake Perkins back, and PLBot gets what they expect out of him, then we're looking at, a good, if he can get to that 32 plate appearance mark, which I do not expect him to get next week, but he is along the same lines as others that we've talked about, where even if he's not starting the game, he can still be a threat to get you the stolen bases that you're looking for. But at 32.7 plate appearances, PLBot has them projected for 2.6 stolen bases on the week as well. So the other positive that we'll get to in the next section as well, of course, is that the Milwaukee Brewers and the Chicago Cubs both have five games in the first half. They have a five-game series with a doubleheader on Monday. And so they've got a nice set of games for them to take. He could find his way into two or three of those games throughout the course of the week, giving you even more opportunity for stolen bases there. So Brandon Lockridge, readily available, not even rostered anywhere in the main event. So if you're desperate for speed, Brandon Lockridge would be somebody at least PLBot is looking at.
I am in on that in every NFBC format league, regardless of size. You mentioned the five games. You mentioned the two leaves, right? Blake Perkins is on bereavement leave. That can be up to seven games. We typically have no idea. They don't tell us why they're on bereavement leave, sure. But I do not expect to see him back probably on Monday. Monday's the doubleheader.
Sure.
Right. So there's possibly two games right there, even prior to Isaac Collins and Blake Perkins going on their respective leaves. Lockridge had been getting the starts versus lefties. They face a lefty Tuesday and Thursday. So I expect to see him in the lineup at least three, quite possibly four or all five of that first half of the week, that five games. And there's going to be a lot of other guys that you'll want to get out of your lineup that are probably only getting two if they're playing three games and you know they're going to sit one of them. So that's huge. You're getting double the playing time probably out of Locklear the first half of this week, or Lock Ridge, excuse me, the first half of this week, even if you don't use him for the weekend.
He's not forcing the issue the way I was hoping he would today, going 0 for 5. But that's 0 for 5 with just one strikeout. So, you know, he's putting the bat to the ball at least. He's just not making his way. He needs to do the one thing that'll get him his most value, is that actually getting to first base. So you can't steal first base adage is very appropriate here. But Kevin, any other names out there for stolen bases or runs? Because Lockridge is still going to bat at the bottom of your lineup there. So maybe not as relevant in the runs category.
Yeah, especially in 12s, Andrés Giménez, who returned this week, been a little bit of a disappointment, I think, for many of us that drafted him. But he does have his 10 stolen bases on the season. He had those by, you know, the end of June. So through half of the season, 10 stolen bases. He's been back for 3 or 4 games. I don't think he's made an attempt yet, but Toronto's offense has been going well. And Andrés Giménez has been getting on base since he returned. So I do think we'll see some stolen bases and definitely runs scored the way Toronto's lineup has been going. He's definitely my first choice. Only available in 10% of 15s, but 2/3 of 12-team leagues out there. And then with a lot of availability, this time of year is when I am more apt to use the guys that aren't going to play very much, but are going to steal bases. I am 100% confident in saying that Tyler Tolbert will start a maximum of 2 games this week. He will start one. I think because the Royals have a 7-game week, he will start the one game that they're facing a left-handed starter. And they may sneak him in there one other game because it's a 7-game week. But I also 100% confident that he'll have at least 2 stolen bases this week. That's what he's been averaging over the last 5 scoring periods. One of those, he only had one, but he's had 3 a couple of times to average 2 each week. I think he'll get the 2 this week because he is going to get at least one start with the heavy week. So this time of year in the leagues where I like where I'm sitting in home runs and RBI, and I don't think I'm going to lose ground there. Absolutely, a guy like Tyler Tolbert, I'll throw in my lineup.
Yeah, I mean, and that leads us right into opportunity. Of course, you have to be aware of how many games and the handiness of your opponents that you're going to be reaching for, so you know exactly what you're looking for on the streaming situations, whether you're streaming stolen bases or home runs or anything else. So, leading right into opportunities here, Kevin. This is one of the schedules of the year that are a little bit more interesting than others. As we mentioned, there are 2 teams with an 8-game work week, and that is the Chicago Cubs and the Milwaukee Brewers, as they have a doubleheader on Monday and 6 games with a single game. So they gives them that 5-game series for the first half of your lineup switches in your bi-weekly lineup switches type leagues like the NFBC. Still a handful of teams, though, with 7 games, including Kansas City, Houston, Texas, Colorado, San Diego, San Francisco, and the Los Angeles Dodgers. And for one of the very few times this year, I get to say somebody has only 5 games ahead of themselves this week, yeah. And that is the Tampa Bay Rays with off days on Monday and Thursday. So just that 2-game series against the Yankees on Tuesday, Wednesday. So that'll lead to Tampa's schedule for the week. They will be at home all week, at least in George Steinbrenner Field, with 2 games against the Yankees and then 3 games against St. Louis to end the week. Atlanta will be away from West Sacramento, as I mentioned earlier, as they travel for 3 at Minnesota and then 3 at Seattle. Can't get any different in ballparks between West Sacramento and Seattle. And then the other, you know, notable ballparks that we always talk about, Colorado, they will be splitting their time between hosting the Dodgers for 4 and then going into Pittsburgh for 3. Cincinnati will be away from Great America Small Park as they travel to Anaheim for 3 and then Arizona for 2, for 3 as well. That's got to be a typo. And so with all that, Kevin, I know we already talked about Miguel Rojas. We said this section was going to be shorter because of it. We already talked all my notes here. We already mentioned PL Bot likes him for all the right reasons. And this is where I believe PL Bot's playing, you know, playing time is more accurate with PL Bot has projected for Miguel Rojas at 28.5 plate appearances. He'll get 7.8 hits, 3.7 runs, 3.3 RBIs, one home run, and an 0.8 of a stolen base. I love this. I love the decimal places for all these things. But as I said, anytime you're under one, I like basically say he's got an 80% chance of getting a stolen base at some point during the week. What's your overall thoughts on either Miguel Rojas or anybody else that might have a good opportunity?
No, yeah, like I said, Miguel Rojas, it was somebody I liked right away, and then absolutely love the notes you had added as well. We've talked about quite a few guys that would fit in this category, right? When I was talking Tyler Tolbert, I was talking about the 7-game week for Kansas City. We talked about Urias with Houston getting 7 games, and he's playing every day as their second baseman now. Right, we talked about I really wanted some Chicago Cubs, right? But they're all rostered. They have a set lineup they use every day, and they're all rostered. We know that. Or I love the 8 games. We did talk about some opportunities with Milwaukee. I want a word of caution here. Not only does Tampa only have 5 games this week, the two they play in the first half of the week, one is versus a righty and one versus a lefty. So be very careful with your Tampa Rays the first half of this week. You probably want them, almost all of them, out of your lineup.
Yeah, that whole 5-game work week is not something we've had.
Especially when you got teams with 8.
Yeah, and it's not something you have to deal with all I felt like all season, minus that first like 2 weeks of the season. And so it's been nice. And it was a little, I threw me off a little bit when I noticed that this going into this week.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we got to get to the pitching categories as well. But first, Kevin, we're going to take one more quick break. All right. Heading into our pitching categories, Kevin, we got wins. We got strikeouts. We got our volume starters here. Who has decent matchups that you're willing to throw them out there for two starts?
All right. So I am going to mention Patrick Corbin. I'm going to do that first. Yeah, he just got blown up.
Get it out of the way.
The way I look at that for a guy like Patrick Corbin is we got that one out of the way. So we're good for a couple of starts, right? Especially when he gets to go pitch at Kauffman versus the Royals, who are absolutely horrendous versus lefties. So I'm throwing that out there. He is 86% rostered in 15s now, 31% rostered in 12s. I would use him in any size format versus my Royals, unfortunately. I would. The couple of guys I have that I went through looking at the expected starter every day next week, and I either just absolutely don't like guys or don't like their matchup, or in most cases we're at the time of year where the guys we do like, even though we think they may be available, aren't. They're rostered. But there's a couple of guys that had really good outings. And there's still a lot of question marks, though. Earlier this year, I made the comment that ended up looking absolutely foolish. I said Brandon Young could be the best starting pitcher the Orioles have right now. That has not panned out. But his most recent start versus Houston was amazing. 1 hit, 0 walks in 8 innings pitched. And he gets Houston again. I don't really like the fact that Houston gets to see him again right away. But Brandon Young just dominated them and does get them again. And then Yoenndris Gomez, right? He's made relief appearances for 3 teams this season: New York Yankees, LA Dodgers, Chicago White Sox, and had a cumulative 6.62 ERA in those 12 relief appearances for those 3 teams. And none of them were good for any of the 3 teams. When he ended up with the White Sox, they started stretching him out. And as a starter, he got 46 2/3 innings pitched at AAA and threw a 2.12 ERA. And as a reliever, barely had a strikeout per inning. As he's being stretched out at AAA, 64 strikeouts in 46 innings. The White Sox saw something. This is different. He is absolutely improved with the Chicago White Sox. That may sound crazy to a lot of people, but it is the case. And then his first start with the White Sox after getting called up from AAA, he goes out and gives up one hit, one walk, one run, seven strikeouts versus Detroit. So, yes, there are a lot of red flags there, including pitching to a ERA over six, almost seven, for two-thirds of this season. Before being stretched out over the past month or so by the White Sox. Same with Brandon Young. He has had some horrendous outings, but both of these guys, young pitchers that do have some prospect pedigree here and we've been keeping an eye on for a while, have looked really good in their most recent outings and have nice matchups coming up this week. So that's where I'm heading in the leagues where I need a starter.
Yeah, and I'm glad you kind of got Patrick Corbin out of the way, not only because of his start today and the results, but just get him off your chest and get him out into the ether. You know we're going to bring him up, so you might as well just bring him up first. All right, with all that in mind, then, we still got to be keeping your ratios at bay. Even if you're not able to make a way up the standings, you want to obviously stop anybody from coming up from behind you as well, or dropping yourself down, because as we always say, this is one of those categories where you can actually go down in, and even if you just had a bad spot. So stabilizing your ratios is important. And who are we entering into the rotation now with just 6 weeks to go?
Yeah, I think our biggest thing here, and in recent weeks, I kind of start merging these next two categories because we do typically talk about relievers during the ratio category. But I think Josh Hader going down. So some of us that have been using, goodness, now I'm drawing the blank, Ryan Adam. Yeah, and Abreu, Abreu will now be the closer for Houston, undoubtedly. So we lose a guy and we start looking, all right, we need another one. Who are we putting in our rotation for the ratios? And Garrett Whitlock for your Boston Red Sox has been going fairly well. And I've been interested. Cade Smith does seem to be the guy in Cleveland, so Hunter Gaddis should have availability again. Lucas Erceg, looking like Lucas Erceg. He's had some rough outings this season, but recently he's back to looking like Lucas Erceg looked last season when everybody was waiting for him to take over the closer role in Oakland and then eventually Kansas City. Cole Henry having a really good couple of weeks for the Nationals. Just guys that I'm adding to the list of these late game high leverage relievers is typically who we talk about in this category. Of course, because we're hoping that we could possibly snag a win or a save as well.
Yeah. Yeah, just of course, always go check out Rick Graham's both hold article and all of his relief articles that he does over at Pitcher List when looking at guys that are kind of moving up in situations for their teams, because the higher the leverage, that usually means the better they're doing and the better they can help you out with your ratios as well. All right, well, Brian Abreu, the obvious choice in the saves category. We've talked about him quite a bit already, and we already are on the impression nothing's changing in Philadelphia with John Duran coming back clean. He did not get into the game as Philadelphia didn't win their game, as I was trying to figure out earlier today. But any other – I mean, this is – We're starting to see David Bednar just got back-to-back saves also in New York. So it sure seems they've made it a quote official move at the back end of the Yankees bullpen. Obviously, this goes to show you, as we mentioned, these weren't guys you were going to be dropping anyway, right? At the deadline, just because he moved from one situation to the other, we weren't quite sure what his usage would be. He was still going to be valuable. Ryan Helsley was another one. Obviously, he hasn't moved into that closer role, but he can still be valuable. Mason Miller going to San Diego, et cetera, et cetera. So with New York's situation kind of clearing itself up maybe for the final week, and I couldn't be happier just because I lost Josh Hader in one league where I had Bednar already. So I thought it was the opposite.
Nice.
I just traded for Hader and to stabilize my bullpen. And I'm like, oh, and then Bednar. And then I had Ranger Suarez too. So I was sweating the whole Mason Miller thing. That's turning out to be... I sweated for all the wrong reasons, but I still sweated for, it was still legitimate that I sweated it out. Any other situations that you kind of noticed either wavering or kind of gotten your eye on for if you're desperate for saves in the final couple weeks of the season?
Yeah, there's still some situations to pay attention to, right? Keegan Aiken, the ad for a lot of people for Baltimore last week, little shaky. Yennier Cano still there. Corbin Martin, a guy that Rick Graham says to keep an eye on as well. So I'm looking there. If you think the White Sox are going to win games, Grant Taylor been a little shaky recently as well. In Minnesota, we've seen Justin Topa. I was on the Cole Sands train, but Justin Topa has been getting some run there. I'm still holding Cole Sands in a spot for the Athletics. Sean Newcomb, Michael Kelly could still go either way. So there are still some spots to add a spec guy if you need it. Of course, the Dodgers situation. We always know they're going to send the guy out to get a save that is not in our lineup. That's the way they work. But Colorado, Victor Vodnik, we've seen this over the years work out for us in spurts. So there are some spots out there where we can hope to get a save or two this week as well. Yes, obviously, Abreu being the big one.
Yeah, I mean, staying in the state of Texas, that situation...
That's still, yeah.
That is annoying. We're like, oh, Phil Maton taking over that role. Nope, I'm gonna blow two straight saves after Robert Garcia blew his save earlier in the week as well. But Garcia did get a hold here as well on Friday. I don't know what to think in the situation of Texas, because there's not like an obvious guy that can come up and take over for both of those guys. So just having, Garcia kind of right the ship, because there's plenty of lefties in that bullpen as well, seems like maybe the move that continues to get made. We'll have to see. All these guys are already rostered anyway. They're not really available because you've already taken your spec ads after the trade deadline. But I mean, something to keep an eye on. All right, Kevin, anything else? Well, not anything else. Most important spot. Maybe in this time of year, it's not the most important category, but it's still the most fun. Your wild card speculative ad section here. Who would you have your eye on if they're available to be bid on?
Adam. I have brought this guy up in this category multiple times for multiple seasons. The Arizona Diamondbacks, after getting Jordan Lawler back at AAA on Thursday off of injury, went 2-for-5. And they actually, in the write-up, made a point of saying, and he played all 9 innings in the field. The reason that is they're making that point is because he is expected to finish the season with the major league club. So if he's getting his innings in the field for a couple weeks, I do think we will see Jordan Lawler for the last couple of days of August and then the month of September. If you have room for a stash, I think Jordan Lawler, I've said it this season, I said it last season, he is currently healthy. I think we're going to see Jordan Lawler.
And where does he play? I'm not arguing against your confidence here.
Yep.
It's tough.
Yep. It is.
Blaze Alexander's been looking really good. Obviously,
Blaze Alexander has been like, I saw a tweet yesterday over the past couple of weeks. I don't remember the exact dates and such, but Blaze Alexander's been like the fifth best hitter for fantasy baseball over the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So that is why you bring that up and why I don't have an answer for you, because they've made it clear that Perdomo is their shortstop this season. When Jordan Lawler has been healthy and performing well in the minors, Perdomo is their guy at shortstop. So that is a great point by you that I don't have an answer for. I still think we're going to see him.
I mean, unless
Marte, full-time designated hitter to finish out the season, something along those lines.
Possibly. He could use a break. I mean, it goes back to the point that I mentioned with Locklear and Pavin Smith, if they're going to mm-hmm. be both in the lineup every day or as much as possible, that does not free up the DH spot very, very much for those opportunities as well. So I don't know. We'll see. Lots can happen between now and Lawler's call up. There's not a lot of time left, but Lawler should be available to be bid on. So if this is a stash that you're interested in, it is definitely a wild card. And if they do call him up, they will find a way for him to play. I'm confident in your assessment on that. I just don't know the answer to that question yet. And we won't find out until Tori Lavolo shows us.
Then why'd you ask?
Don't ask questions you don't know the answers to already.
I love it.
Well, with that in mind, Kevin, anything else? What else can you add to our minds and to put ourselves at ease as we head into the final stretch run of the 2025 season?
Yeah, kind of alluded to it earlier. We talk about it a lot. Everybody knows this. Just a reminder, be realistic. When you're looking at where you want to concentrate your fab moves category-wise, be realistic, right? Remember teams in front of you, you can look at the rosters and they may have lost players, and that's the reason you're gaining ground, and you will continue to gain ground without doing much. That's awesome. That's typically not the case. Typically, we have to outperform not just what we were doing, but we have to outperform what our opponents were already doing that we haven't even kept up with, right?
Right.
So be realistic when you're deciding where to attempt to make your moves. Bunched up categories obviously are the easiest spots to gain a lot of ground. And then do not forget to pay attention to the categories where you're not going to gain much ground, but if you don't be careful, you could lose 5 or 6 points. Don't forget that aspect of it. Yes, everybody knows this, but just a reminder, because I find myself doing that quite often. Oh, I can make up this, this, and this. I just need some stolen bases. I'm 12 home runs behind the guy in front of me, but there's 6 teams within 6 of what I have. I do have to concentrate on power. Can't just sell out for speed. So don't forget to look at what's behind you as well.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. But knowing what you can and cannot do is extremely important. So, Kevin, this has been great. Going into a Saturday night with all this added information has been amazing. Not sure how often we'll be able to do it again throughout the course of the season. So we'll just enjoy it while we got it. But after all that, that's going to do it for episode 227 of On the Wire. I am Adam Howe on behalf of Kevin Hastings. Thanks for listening, and we bid you goodbye.